There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, 1207 FM Talk 106.5. And by the way, our brand new intern who's in the booth with Dalton right now for Midday Mobile. You hear that show intro? I'm going to have you tasked with working up a brand new show intro over the next couple of weeks. So be ready for that, and we'll talk more about the actual job at hand here coming up soon. Hey, it's Midday Mobile, live local talk over the next couple hours. You and I hanging out, 343-0106, the phone number, the text line. Coming up in hour number two, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, joins us as it is the start of National Fishing and Boating Week, culminating on Saturday with a free fishing day for folks. So we'll talk more with him. And coming up in just a little bit, Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News joins us as a rap session on Friday in Montgomery, what they did and what they didn't do and what to expect out of special sessions. We'll get to that in just a second. I would like to add in that right now, let's see, is that a Mobile reading? Is that the airport? Okay, Mobile airport reading, 96 degrees now at the airport. No, that's not the no heat indices yet. That's not a heat index. That is just 96. So can we get a 96 and probably another couple hours worth of heating today before it tops out. Yeah, the heat index 100 degrees. All right. And tomorrow, well, tomorrow doesn't look much better. Maybe by the end of the week, Dr. Bill says a break and actually some rain and some cooler temperatures. But yeah, a couple days of 96 today, tomorrow, and maybe even Wednesday on the way. Now, it's got me thinking. Have you done this in a while? I think I've. Most of us as kids looked at the Guinness World Book of Records for highs and lows and most and all those kind of things. Well, if you check Guinness, they say the highest registered air temperature on Earth. Okay? No, it's not here today. It's not the 96 here today. It was 134.1 degrees Fahrenheit. 134.1 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, I don't know. There's nothing about a heat index here, and probably humidity wasn't a big factor since that was recorded at Furnace Creek Ranch in Death Valley out in California. They say July 10th, 1913. Okay? Although there's a whole bunch of challenges to it, like anything. They say, well, that's been beaten. There was a report in Libya that they had gotten even hotter than that, and then somebody disagreed with the methodology. I mean, there's a bunch of record temperature deniers out there that conspiracy theorist. We're going to go with the one from the United States because I know they say that 1922 in Libya registered 136 degrees, but now there's people who say, well, their faulty equipment recorded an error and that's not accurate. So, and I'm going to stay stateside. 134 degrees, Death Valley, there at Furnace Creek Ranch. So there you go, 134. So it could be worse. It could. 96 with a heat index of 100. It could be worse. Some other some notes. These are unconfirmed and unverified high temperature claims. All right. So there are some that they're saying that are hotter. 136 in Cherokee, Oklahoma. They've disputed that one. Also, 140 degrees in Copperell, Texas, in 1960. They said they have not verified that. Okay. Also, let's see, in the Flaming Mountains of China. Now, see, here it comes from China. Already, you know, of question here from China. Supposedly, in the Flaming Mountains, which, I mean, a good place to have a high temperature, In 2008, the Chinese said that it made 152.2 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, mind you, the confirmed, generally agreed to, planet's hottest temperature, 134 degrees there in Death Valley. Chinese, probably stealing our heat and retooling it, say that it was 152.2 degrees in the Flaming Mountains in China. So there you go. I don't know. You can do your own, you know, truthing on the web. There are people that are, that you go here and look. Somebody said it was 188 degrees in Iran this time and 183 degrees in Sudan. Those are all unconfirmed. I could just make up that, you know what, in Bala Battery today, it's 194 degrees. But right now, the closest thing we have to something that's been checked off on by groups like the World Meteorological Organization and all the people that, I guess they wear lab coats and reflective sunglasses and go out there and say whether something is or isn't, is 134.1 degrees Fahrenheit out in Death Valley. So we're not that hot yet. So things are looking up. Oh, by the way, too, if we get time today, and Dalton, I don't know if you, we didn't get a chance to talk about this morning. Did you see this from yesterday? People were saying that maybe the government tested the internet kill switch. Who knew that was a thing? It says yesterday, about 2 o'clock in the afternoon yesterday, that Google Cloud, which would have your Gmail, YouTube, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, and a lot of other apps and web pages, went offline. And there are people showing showing that happened at the same time. They're showing the graphics here happened the same time on all these systems at one time. Now, maybe some of the people are saying it's 188 degrees in Syria and that's the hottest temperature, are also saying that that was a test by the federal government to use their internet kill switch. They had one. And how do they wear a kill switch? Is it on one of those little cords they put around their belt if they get thrown from the controls there? Or how does that work exactly? We'll work that into the show today and hear from you. All right, coming back, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Well, it's a wrap in Montgomery, at least for now. What's his take on it? We'll get it when we come back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
John says it's 106.5 degrees at his house. That's good. I like that. I like that. Elsewhere, 96 with the heat index of 100 at the airport. Heat values may vary wherever you are, but tomorrow looks like the same thing. We'll get more from Dr. Bill's forecast coming up at about 12:35. This man's probably not only hiding from the heat, but recovering from legislative exhaustion. My buddy Todd Stacey from the Alabama Daily News. Hey, man.
Hey, yeah, that's about right.
You're just hiding from everything, the weather, the legislators, all that.
Yeah. After the session ends, you always kind of need some time to recover. But this one was especially grueling, especially because of the way they ended it. They went 4 straight days at the very end, and that's pretty rare. You know, really, 3 days is kind of a lot to go. And so 4, man, I think everybody was pretty much ready for it to end.
Is that okay? Let's go off into the land of the subjective for a second. And you have so much experience in Montgomery and Washington. You've watched this process from the inside so many times. Is that because they were trying to force something, you know what I'm saying, to wear somebody down to get something, or they just didn't want to come back the following week?
Yeah, I think it's more about just wanting to go ahead and get it over with. In fact, they really wanted to be done Thursday, but there were just, you know, little things, little bills to. We didn't quite get over the finish line. And a lot of times, Sean, when it comes to that last day, most everybody wants to go home and wants to end. You know, the budgets get finished. The kind of must-pass stuff gets finished. But out of courtesy to other members who, you know, their bills, they want their bills to have a chance too. So out of courtesy to them, they'll wait around a little bit, give it some more time. You know, if you got a bill in the Senate, let the House take some time to pass it. Things like that. So it tends to kind of drag out a little bit, just out of courtesy to everybody, to have at least a chance to get their bill of vote.
You know, you said, you quoted Senator Wagner, Jeppe Wagner, in today's email. We'll tell folks how to get that email, of saying it was the number one session of his career in terms of high-profile issues. You point out that's really saying something. Yeah, it is. I mean, if all the year, I mean, Wagner's been there a while.
He's been there a long time. He started in the House in 1966. So, I mean, you do the math. And now, of course, he's in the Senate, and he's the longest-serving state senator and all this. So, yeah, he's been there a long time. So when he was walking out of the chamber, I grabbed him and just said, well, you know, hey, let's talk reaction. What grade would you give the session, and just what's your general reaction? He graded it at about a B because he wanted some more things to get done, including the lottery. But, you know, his point was not that it was the number one session in terms of quality, but in terms of how many issues and how many really big issues that they actually dealt with. And you can go back and start with the gas tax, right? That seems like a year ago or something, but we started the session talking about, you know, raising the gas tax to pay for infrastructure. That just unto itself, that was a monumental issue and a big, heavy lift. But, you know, they started, you know, into the session talking about budget issues, talking about a lottery, the abortion bill, medical marijuana. Just, I mean, you could stop there and it would be a huge session in terms of issues. And each one of those, like take the lottery and medical marijuana. Well, the lottery didn't pass and medical marijuana got watered down quite a bit. But just the fact that those were issues on the table that got real votes and were considered in serious fashion in both House and Senate, that's a lot. It's a lot of bandwidth to have to deal with. And of course, like I said, abortion, man, that carried a lot of weight, got a lot of national attention. They ended the marriage licenses. They got another big push on rural broadband. Just a lot of really substantive, heavy issues. And for Jeppe Wagner to say it was more than any other time in his career, it's a big deal.
That's for sure. Just joining us, talking to Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Let's hit the rewind and go to the beginning there of what you said, and also the beginning of session, because I gaveled into session, quickly gaveled out, and gaveled back into a special addressing the gas tax. I think no one needs to look any farther than what happened in that special and understand that if there is a consensus from the executive branch and those that are in the right positions in the legislative branch, things can get done pretty darn quickly in Montgomery.
I think you're right. And, you know, they've been talking about the gas tax for a long time, really mm-hmm. the last 3 years. And so it had been 25 years since the state has raised its gas tax. The reason that's a problem is that, you know, that purchasing power has gone down between inflation and just people, you get more miles to the gallon in your car, so that gas tax doesn't pay for as much. So it has been a problem. They've been talking about fixing it, but it took Kay Ivey really, you know, embracing this as her own plan. You know, sometimes governors will let the legislature just do what they do and only get involved when necessary. But she really took this on as her initiative, took ownership of it. And you're right, when that happened and you had the House leadership and the Senate leadership pretty much all committed to this, it was only a matter of time. And when you saw the votes, I mean, these things passed overwhelmingly, like, you know, 70-80% mm-hmm. percent of folks voting for them in the House and the Senate. So, but yeah, when they're committed and they want to get it done, they can get it done. But that's easier said than done, you know, getting everybody on the same page. So you really got to credit the governor. She wanted to win. She figured out how to do it, formed a plan that they could support. I'll argue if she'd have gone a cent higher, then she would have lost some people. But she kept it, you know, right, that 10 cent over time. And I think it allowed people to feel comfortable about supporting it.
Okay, well, this is a good portion of compare and contrast on this, I think, because you mentioned executive branch governors deciding whether they're going to make something their issue or just say, hey, it's up to the legislature to do it. You could compare the gas tax, and that's what gets me, because if you're saying that people took some, they must have believed in it and known that they felt like it needed to happen because they failed on lottery but got a gas tax increase. Republicans in the governor's mansion, head of the House, head of the Senate, Republicans passed a tax increase and did it with, like you said, votes that weren't of narrow margin. Flip it around and you have the people clamoring for a lotto. They don't care where the money goes. They just want to play lotto, man. And they couldn't get that done. You know, if the governor would have decided lotto was her issue, just think about this. Let's play this game. If you know, Governor Ivey, although, you know, when she was running for office, said she was up for the right of referendum, but didn't, you know, wasn't on one side or the other. Let's say she had taken the lotto on like she did the gas tax. Would we now be looking at a constitutional amendment coming up next year?
I don't think there's any question. That's a great point. If she did the same thing on the lottery, if she decided that was going to be her issue and put her full focus and weight behind it, I think it'd have been hard to stop. Now, you still would have had the same issues between the different casino interests and all that kind of stuff, but you make a great point. And you're correct. She was never a proponent of the lottery. She just said, look, I'm fine giving people the right to vote. That's her position. She just never really wanted to be on one side or the other. And that was pretty clear in the campaign. Whereas with infrastructure, I mean, she's been talking about that for a little while. Maybe she wasn't specific on exactly how much the gas tax was going to be raised, but during the campaign, you know, infrastructure came up pretty often, and really in the previous legislative session too, when everybody had supported, getting infrastructure done. So yeah, you never know. Maybe you'll see that next year, Sean. I tend to think, because you're not the only one that's disappointed by this, there's a lot of folks who are, you know, kind of looking back and saying what happened. And maybe it's just a little easier for me because I'm there day to day, and you saw the breakdown starting to occur. And once those casino interests were just not aligned and they were going to use every bit of leverage they could to stop this thing, then you got the, you know, concerns about more money going to education. It was just kind of easy to see it starting to break, you know, those fractures starting to make a difference. And I really do think that if they're going to do something on gambling, if it's going to be a lottery, if we're going to figure out how to take advantage of casino revenue, then everybody's got to be at the table, and they've got to come up with a solution that really impacts everybody. And that means the Poarch Creeks probably more than anybody. They've got the largest stake. But it also includes some of these other operators, because again, If you leave them out, they might have the power to stop what you're doing. And so if they're going to do something next year or the year after on gambling, I do think the governor will have to be involved and say, okay, here's what we're doing. You know, let's get everybody on the same page. You saw what it did with the gas tax. It makes a difference. So that may be what it takes.
I wonder if this is not a piece of evidence or at least a narrative that people that believe that special interests have bigger voices than everyday voters, because can't you argue that the individual members of the legislature would receive, at least the way the polling has looked, and we'll see, you know, I mean, I know there's polls and polls can be disagreed with, but the way the polling has looked, the people of the state, and I say this just because I'm trying to, you know, parrot what people are saying. I have no dog in the hunt. I would actually like to see some clarity in gambling in the state, but, you know, whatever. I would like us all to be all in or all out. But in this lotto world, they know that this is popular, so when they don't move something through, they're showing that they're more interested in what the Poarch Creeks say or what the parimutuel betting people say or these different players than they are just making constituents happy.
Well, that's one way to look at it, but I would remind you of this, that no votes, you can vote no for a lot of different reasons and keep those same people happy. And I think if almost any state representative voted no on this thing, they probably had some pretty good reasons behind it that would not cause their constituents to throw them out of office. Otherwise, they wouldn't vote that way because they're not idiots. But think about it this way. If you're a Republican who is not necessarily against the lottery but thought, well, goodness, why are we giving 75% to the general fund and only 25% to education?
Because that's who needs it.
Well, I don't know. I'm just playing devil's advocate here.
Right.
But, that's not really that hard to justify to constituents. Say, look, I support the lottery, but I think it needs to go toward education, so I voted no. Not a whole lot of folks might be mad about that. On the other hand, if you're a Democrat and you represent Macon County, where Victory Land is, or any number of areas near Victory Land, and you said, look, this thing didn't support the casino and the jobs that exist there, so I voted no. You're voting for what your constituents want. So that's what I mean. There's a lot of different factors into why this thing failed. And it's, yeah, I get the argument that, like, well, the majority of the people want this, so won't there be a backlash? Well, no, because it's easy to say I voted no because of this specific reason, but I still support a lottery. I mean, that's what politicians do.
And if I'm running a campaign against a no-vote incumbent, Todd, I say, our ad rolls out, legislator so-and-so voted to keep maybe as much as $35 million away from Alabama school children. Because that no vote equals zero. You know, if 25% yeah,
I'd love to see that campaign. I don't think it's likely, though. I don't think it's likely. What you're going to be seeing is, if, especially with these freshman legislators, those who voted yes on the gas tax, that's what people are going to run on, because that's easier to pin
big
down.
Time.
It was a yes or no question. You know how many different lottery proposals there were and different votes on different amendments? You know how complicated that is? You can really, you can really split hairs over it.
All right, when we come back, speaking of those other gambling interests, there's a couple people theorizing in the state that get ready, because the Attorney General's office will start bringing the crackdown on these charity bingo hall parlor things when it gets around to it, now that session's over. We'll get more from Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. We're coming right back after a news update.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5, still 96 at the airport. What's this one say? Loosedale 98. What's up, Loosedale? Cross the line over there, 98 degrees. Heat index 100. Don't worry, it's nowhere near the record of 134 for Death Valley. So we're not even in record book territory yet. Continue our conversation with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. That's the website you need to go to. And he'll help remind you of that great, great website. If people register, you'll get that email in your inbox each morning. Todd, tell folks how to do this.
Yeah, look, we'd love to have you on board as a subscriber. It's free, no cost at all. But go to aldailynews.com. Right there at the top is a subscribe button. Just push it, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. Every morning, I send out an email that kind of serves as a newspaper. We get to the top five stories, plus all the headlines from around the state, the front pages, just to really give you a good sampling of every bit of news from around the state. Plus, we kind of give you more to click on if you want to read through to more, or you can go to the next item. So it's really user-friendly news, and I'll be glad to have you as a subscriber. Just aldailynews.com.
And I recommend it, y'all. It's a big part. It's like I'm hitting the refresh, waiting for that baby to come in each morning, because it really is. It's a great roundup of what happens nationally and here in Alabama. Speaking of Alabama, this is more in the what's next portion that you and I both like to talk about. What do you take? You have a take on the rumor mill, and you and I know a lot of the players that have been saying, hey, the next thing that's getting ready to happen, here's what's fixing to happen, is that the AG's office is going to start cranking down on these paramutual betting casino facilities to make them cry uncle before next session.
Maybe. I don't think the politics of the session really have anything to do with it.
What
you've seen?
No.
I don't know. Only because the Attorney General's office, they have to build a case, and they have to do an investigation and all that kind of stuff. Now, yeah, if you do it during the middle of the legislative session, maybe it kind of complicates things, but so maybe it's a little easier to do it afterwards. But I'd say this, look at what they've been doing in other places. Look at Birmingham. I don't know if you remember this, but they cracked down on about three of these sort of low-rent pop-up casinos up there that had machines, illegal machines in them. The question is, and they did some of that in Walker County too, the question is, how different are those machines than the ones being used at places like Victory Land? Because what's been going on is kind of a shell game. So you know, back in the day, Governor Riley cracks down on all these illegal gambling casinos because the machines were slot machines, and they operated like slot machines. And so they, time and again, they've gone back to the well to say, okay, we're going to change our machines to make them more like quote-unquote bingo machines. I mean, they've gone out of their way to the point where sometimes they're really not nearly as profitable as the original machines are. But the question is whether they, even these updated machines, still violate the state's statute against illegal gambling machines, slot machines. I mean, it is clear in black and white that if a machine looks like or acts like and sounds like a slot machine, then it is a slot machine. And the Supreme Court has upheld that time and again. So it just depends on how serious they are about going after these machines and if they truly do operate like slot machines. And so I don't know if it's true or not. I don't know if he's going after them or not. But I do think that you have somebody in the Attorney General's office now who wouldn't be afraid of doing that, and that hasn't always been true.
Yeah, yes, and it comes and goes like the tide. You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes we're pursuing it, sometimes we're going to think back to former Governor Bentley, we're going to leave it up to local law enforcement, then we're cracking back down, then we're, you know, it's either they're running an illegal operation or not. I mean, it's just leaves regular Alabamians going, come on, man.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, I think the original problem, you can probably go back to Troy King on this, is just like if you allow it to exist, if you allow it to start existing, then it's really hard to actually come back and shut it down, right? If you allow it to proliferate without, you know, getting started and get roots, then it's hard to come back 15 years later to say, no, we're going to rip this out, you know, root and stem. But, you know, and as difficult as it was and as unpopular as it was from Governor Riley's perspective, he was right. I mean, he was right on the law. The Supreme Court absolutely upheld that. I think it's like four different rulings that they were upheld every single time. But after he left office, yes, they were a lot less likely to actually follow through with enforcing the law. But, Sean, you were talking earlier about Alabama's complicated gambling laws, and I agree that there should be some clarity there. But part of the problem is that they were unenforced.
I agree.
When you don't, it's kind of hard to complain about how weird the laws are when you just choose not to enforce them.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about things getting rooted. They shouldn't get rooted because the day they go online, if defined by, and this doesn't mean somebody who can be for gambling can understand what I'm saying here, but if the law of the land says that thing is against the law, then day one that it's known that it's operating, don't leave it to local law enforcement because, you know, in a lot of small rural areas, there's too much motivation to do nothing. You go in there through Aaliyah and you shut it down, or you change the law and let everybody run slot machines, man. Either have the law apply equally to everybody, you know, either way, don't have this kind of hodgepodge thing. This, I think it's irritating.
Yeah, well, and it also just kind of complicates any conversation about lottery, any other kind of gambling operation. You know, we wrote a story about this a couple weeks ago because I was asking the Porch Greeks, you know, what do y'all want? What is y'all's end game here? And of course, they'd love a compact with the state and all this. But I was trying to get it, you know, why did y'all not like this bigger lottery question that involved the casinos and these video lottery terminals? And they said, made a great point. They said, look, that not only does it help our competitors, but it further complicates what is already bad law as far as gambling goes in the state of Alabama. That was the best point I thought they made, is that you're right. It's you're going on top of a foundation of what can be unclear gambling law and just complicating it further by sort of grandfathering folks in. So their point was, I think it's a good one, that if you're going to do gambling, if you're going to do lottery, slots, casinos, whatever, then you better have a strong law. You better have a strong regulatory system, which we don't right now, that cracks down on wrongdoers and keeps people accountable. That's a big part of gambling law in big casino states, but you can't do that unless you kind of go wholesale into it, and I think that still would be a pretty difficult sell in a lot of places in this state.
I think it is worth explaining. Let's just take a second here, because we've talked about it years ago, a couple years ago at length, but it's been a while. The idea of a compact between the Poarch Creeks and the state. I mean, this is something that was discussed several times during the Bentley administration as well. Explain what that means to folks in layman's terms.
Well, you know, the Indians, the Poarch Creek, they're federally regulated. That means, and the courts have been consistent on this, that even though their machines are outside of the scope of what is allowed in Alabama, as long as they're federally regulated and the state can't intervene, and so they're in the clear legally. At the same time, they would benefit. They could expand their operations not only in Atmore but in other places, including in new places like Birmingham and North Alabama. If they had a negotiated, agreed-to compact with the state of Alabama. And the reason, so it's good for them because they'd make more money. They'd have new properties, new authorities to go in and expand their operations, go to, you know, Tier 3, go to table games, things like that, more of maybe a tourism aspect to it. And that's a good thing for them. The good thing for the state would be they would actually make money off of it, right? You'd have some kind of tax or an agreed to fee, and what they had talked about in the past was about $500 million, which is not chump change.
No,
that doesn't include the other $500 million, which will be guaranteed in capital costs. So they were going to build, you know, two sites at $250 million. A piece. So, yeah, for a state that's looking to fund prison construction and a lot of other, you know, needs like Medicaid, $500 million in cash plus the taxes that come from those capital costs, that's not chump change. Now, you know, many in the state, including state leaders, have reservations about just expanding the casino industry statewide. But the Poarch Creeks, you know, their point is, look, we're here. And there's really nothing the state can do about what we already operate. They have three casinos statewide, so that's where the impasse is. And I think it's likely at some point, I don't know how soon, I think it's likely at some point that some sort of agreement gets made. But if that's in the near future or still a few years down the line, it's really tough to say.
Yeah, but it's a situation where, for knowing that they have this guaranteed revenue and all these, that they essentially tell other operators that it's a monopoly. There'd be a gambling monopoly.
Well, it kind of depends on the agreement, because you could, and I think that's likely, because they're in a lot stronger negotiating position than, say, Victory Land or Green Track or some of these others. I mean, they kind of hold a lot of the cards, but not all of them. And so if some of those, you know, like you said, the paramutual, the old dog track casinos somehow gain some leverage to say, this thing, we'll kill it again, and we will not pass this unless we're at the table and part of the solution, you could see a situation where that becomes a part of it. I think what's more likely, Sean, is that, you know, they just buy it. You know, why not just... If that's the way you want it, if you're going to be arguing against our bill, we'll just buy you out. That could be a solution to the Poarch Creeks. And again, maybe it would be a monopoly, but that's what they want. If they're going to agree to give all this money to the state, what they get in return is, you know, the rights, the exclusive rights to operating casinos.
Yeah, that's obviously worth more than $500 million to be able to offer that on the front end.
Over the long term, yes, it is.
Absolutely. All right, before we wrap up here, I want to run through an interesting one here. This was both a win and a loss for medical marijuana. Wouldn't you say, I mean, if you had to say what passed and what failed, yeah, medical marijuana didn't pass, but it also didn't just get left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, and really... probably the reason for that is that Carley's Law, which, you know, is it, that Carley's Law, they passed it a few years ago to allow UAB to research the CBD oil and its effect on, like, epilepsy and some of these other just tough diseases. That was going to expire, and nobody wanted it to expire. That's a good program they have going on at UAB, helps kids. And so that was always a part of this medical marijuana bill. And because of that, it kind of became a must-pass bill. But you're right. What they did was water it down. You started from Senator Tim Melson's bill which he is a medical doctor, and he does research in the pharmaceutical industry. It would have legalized marijuana starting in 2021. So you actually would have been immediate. We would have had like 18 months or something. But it set up a commission to figure out how it would be run and all these kind of things. But it was a legalization bill. It would legalize medical marijuana for up to about 30 different conditions. Passed out of the Senate. It was pretty amazing that it passed so quickly out of the Senate. But when it went to the House, they put the brakes on it. They thought we were moving too fast in the area of medical marijuana. They said, you know, let's go ahead and create this commission. Let's go ahead and create this board that will meet and kind of figure out a way forward on this medical marijuana policy, but stop short of actual legalization. So that's what they ended up passing. And again, it reauthorized Carly's Law. So what you got is this commission is going to meet for a year and recommend changes. And you know, with things like that, Sean, sometimes they can fall back on saying, well, see, this was recommended from all the experts, and so that's why I passed it. So,
good point. And then just a quick one here before we go to the break. We'll talk about this, I'm sure, over the months to come. Special session, it looks like, coming for prison reform sometime later this year.
That's right. And, you know, prisons, we've talked about it a lot. It's a big issue. The federal government has a lot of problems with us. We've got a lawsuit. We've got a court order from the judge. We've got a threatened lawsuit from the Department of Justice. So we're really on the brink. But the one thing that's still happening is the Department of Justice is still negotiating with the governor's office and the Department of Corrections about what exactly to do. They've not really been specific, and they haven't come down to the nitty-gritty on, okay, we know you have these problems, but what do we do to fix it to y'all's satisfaction? We won't know that for another couple of months. And so the feeling was, well, why go pass all these prison bills, these prison reform bills that we all might feel good about, but if we don't know that they're actually addressing the problem, then we've kind of wasted our time and potentially made the problem worse. So they just pushed the pause button. They punted, I guess you could say, to a later date, which I'm hearing late September, early October will be that special session called to go through all these issues, related to prison reform, and that will be a big heavy lift.
All right. Remind folks once again who have not signed up for some odd reason to get that email each morning. How do they do it?
Easy to do. Just go to aldailynews.com. Right there at the top is subscribe. Enter your name and your email, and you're on the list. Look forward to having you as a subscriber, and I look forward to your feedback as well.
All right, man. Get some rest, because they'll be back in special before we know it, man.
That's right. All right, y'all be good.
Will do. Todd Stacy, Alabama Daily News, and we're coming right back. Grab some calls and text 343-0106. What was your biggest disappointment? What was, you think, the biggest success of this last legislative session?
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Now just think about that. Not that it doesn't particularly bother me. It's just as an academic study here. Just think if Governor Ivey would have put the executive branch bully pulpit power behind Lotto and not gas tax increase. Wonder if they would have turned out differently. Hey, Todd's always a great person to talk to. Seriously, go check out that website. I think you'll enjoy it. Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, the name of the website. All right, before we get to next hour, and next hour, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon's going to join us. We'll talk about this first weekend of snapper season, but more importantly, the bigger story, right? The bigger story, why it matters to us along the Gulf Coast. It's National Fishing and Boating Week. And with that being said, the revenue, what that means for our area, I mean, it's really something. You start looking what it means for local retailers, local lodging, And then on top of that, what it means in tax revenue for the state when people go out and go fishing, whether they're going freshwater fishing or they're going out in the Gulf or they're in the bays or whatever, what that means. It's something I think that should make you think, okay, as we protect different parts of our economy around here, what should be high up on the list? That one should be very important. Whether you don't give a darn about fishing at all, but you do care about the money of it, I think it's worth worth talking to, or worth talking about. Let's go to let's do this. Okay, do I have time for this? Just by the way, if you didn't catch the story this morning, Dalton and I were talking about the Congressman Matt Gaetz getting the milkshake thrown on him. At first, it just said in the WEAR TV story, they just said it was a drink. And now, more detail, it turns out that it was a milkshake. And remember, what was it, 2 weeks ago we were talking about this? This was catching on in Europe, and I guess specifically in the United Kingdom, as people were protesting Nigel Farage and other conservative leaders there over the Brexit decision, that the antis were throwing milkshakes on them. Remember that? Okay, and then we said, I wonder when this comes stateside. So I guess, Dalton, we can check. Is this the first stateside milkshaking that has gone on? Congressman Matt Gaetz, just right across the border in northwest Florida. What's up, Picola? He was having a town hall Saturday afternoon. He was leaving there when police say a drink was thrown at Gaetz's back as he was leaving the Brouhaha restaurant where the Won't Back Down town hall was going on. As you heard in the news update from WKRG, Amanda Lee Kondratiev, 35, was arrested in connection to the incident. No word yet on what it is, a milkshake. No word yet what kind of milkshake, but it was a milkshake. Dalton, have we gotten any kind of... That one we had for Nigel Farage was a banana and salted caramel, or caramel, or caramel. In this case, I don't know what it was. I'd like to know. Because, I mean, as of tasty ways of protest, milkshaking. All right, coming right back. Hour number two of Midday Mobile.